Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0, the only podcast that focuses on mental health while mixing in movies, music, books, sports, and pop culture. Here are your hosts, Rebecca and Joe Lombardo.
Good morning and welcome to Voices for Change 2.0. We are so glad to have you with us today.
Yeah, thanks for being with us today. We really appreciate it. It's exciting to be here every Saturday with you guys. It's one of the highlights of our week for sure.
We did have a little bit of a situation. We were scheduled today to have a two-hour show, and there was a bit of a miscommunication with our 12 p.m. guest. So we are just having a one-hour show today. Sorry to deliver the bad news. But we definitely will try to have her on again in the future. So,
yep. So really quick. Just want to put out there to all of our American listeners that we want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving as it's this Thursday. And, obviously we're not going to be having – we're gonna do a replay show next Saturday because it's what you do on a holiday.
Yeah. Our producer is traveling for the holidays, so – we can't do a new show, which is fine by us. We are looking forward to a 4-day weekend together.
Yep.
So we'll be replaying an old show. We haven't decided which one yet, but when we know, you'll find out.
When we know, you'll know.
Absolutely.
In the meantime, copious amounts of Thanksgiving goodness will be eaten.
Absolutely.
Next weekend. So.
So we have our guest in studio. Well, I guess I can't say in studio. I don't know where that came from, but. Our first guest today is a mental health advocate, a coach, an author, and the host of his own podcast. He is the brains behind the hashtag Anxious Writers, which we will delve into a little bit later. Please welcome to our show, James Prescott.
Hello. Hi there.
Good morning.
Hey, James.
Yeah. Well, it's not morning
here.
For you.
No, it's 4:00 p.m. here in London, yeah.
Oh, well, thanks for, I'd say thanks for waking up early to be with us, but that's inaccurate.
No, I didn't have to wake up early at all.
Yeah.
But we're happy to have you with us, sir. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. It's great to be here.
Do you have any questions for us before we jump right in?
No, I'm just looking forward to talking about all these things that we've that you've mentioned already, and some other things. Yeah, I can't wait to talk to you. So it's been a while since we arranged this. So I've been I've been excited about this for a while. So yeah.
Great.
Yep, we are rather happy to.
Oh,
so our first question for you is: when did you first know that you wanted to be a writer?
Oh, wow. Nobody's ever asked me that before. Nobody has ever asked me that before. It wasn't like I didn't sit down as a child and think, oh, I want to be a writer. But I was always good at writing. Like, it was my strongest subject at school. Like, I was always it just came naturally to me. I always found it really easy. I only really found out that other people didn't find it as easy as me as an adult, because I was like, oh, I can write a blog post in like 20 minutes and five, which is good enough to go out and, whatever. And they were like, really? It takes me hours to write a blog post. And I was like, really? I honestly didn't realize how easy writing came to me until a few years ago. It was always just the thing I was good at. But I never kind of thought about being a writer. I didn't really know what I wanted to do when I was younger. It was really when I did a gap year with a charity called Youth with a Mission, which is a Christian charity. And we had to do some written assignments for that year. And, the feedback I got from mine was like, you've got this gift and you need to start using it. you need to start using it to help people and serve other people, and you should explore this. And so that's what I did. Like, I came back from that year and I started a blog and just started writing. And it was about, to start with, it was just me on a kind of WordPress blog, writing about whatever kind of crossed my mind to write about. A lot of my early writing was about faith and my spiritual journey for a long time. And I started, I started reading a lot more books as well, and around that time. And I think that's when I kind of thought, well, it'd be really cool if I could write a book one day. I didn't think I would write a book. I didn't think that I would ever get published. I didn't think anybody would ever read my stuff. And about, I think, seven or eight years ago, I decided, I got a kick up the backside from a couple of people just saying, like, you need to kind of really take this seriously. Like, be professional, get a self-hosted blog and, try and write some little e-books and maybe a book, you've got ability to do that. So, and you should be doing that. So that's what I did again. And yeah, I got a decent following.
I was just going to say, so you really had a lot of people behind you pushing you.
Yeah,
to,
I did. Yeah. I just found people, I think. I found people online. I found writers, blogs for writers. I started reading a lot more, and I was getting inspired by a lot of people, and I thought, this is something I'd love to do. It was a combination of things, really. And yeah, I just started writing, and I started loving it. To start with, I think it was about my ego. I wasn't quite as mature back then, and I was writing to be famous. I'm ashamed to say that. But I had a kind of spectacular failure and kind of stopped, and had good friends around me who told me I needed to, sort this out, because my ego was getting in the way of my writing. And so I took a break from publishing anything publicly for 3 months and just wrote for myself. And that's when I really found my voice and found what I wanted to say and started enjoying writing and enjoying the creative process. It's still my favorite period as a writer, actually, the time when I wasn't publishing anything, ironically. But
that's one thing is I found, because I kind of have a similar attack when I'm writing music, is if I'm writing for me versus trying to please other people or satisfy some kind of request or whatever, just for my own pure enjoyment, it just turns out better, and you almost have that tack of, I don't care what anybody else thinks. I wrote this. I like it. This is really how I feel about this certain situation or what have you. And it resonates more with you, and it's honest, and when you've got that honesty to whatever it is that you've written, it'll resonate with other people. People recognize good, and they latch onto it, and that's you can't force it. I guess
absolutely, you
say.
Can't force it. I think that's what I did. I just started writing. I think it was on the train to work on my phone, on a private blog, which is still out there, still exists. I never shared it with anybody. It was like an online journal, in a sense, and I just wrote whatever came out. I didn't plan anything. I just wrote from the heart. And I started to find a lot of these things were saying the same thing and pointing in the same direction. And I thought, oh, I've got something here. This is something that I really care about. I should write more about this. And so when I started blogging again, that's what I started writing about. And it was about creativity and the creative process and being authentic in your life and in your creative work. And I started writing lots of blog posts about that, and wrote an ebook about that. And that, and the ebook that I wrote kind of broke me a little bit, because I suddenly got tons of people signing up for my blog. And that was a really great thing that happened. And then after that, I wrote a book, and I never thought that would be published, and then it was published earlier this year, and so now I'm working on my next book, you know, and so that's the kind of short version of the writing story. more recently, I've started writing a lot for Medium, and I write for a magazine, a few magazines on Medium. I'm on the kind of list of writers for top writers for writing and creativity and things. And I just started writing for Huffington Post as well. So it's really exciting, and I really love it. You know, creating something
awesome.
Which can help other people. It's just, you know, and I've been through like periods with writer's block and things like that, and where I've had creative blocks and anxiety and fear about creative work has got in the way. Procrastination, all those things, perfectionism, these are all kind of to do with fear, and so I've struggled with all of that, but you know, I'm still here, and I still want to write, and
that,
I tend to keep
that
writing.
That actually leads into our next question, James. You've spoken about overcoming creative anxiety. What does that actually mean to you?
Well, you see, I've talked to a lot of people about this on largely on social media. And it was, this is why I launched Anxious Writers, really. I mean, in terms of creative anxiety, a lot of writers struggle with either perfectionism or just like writer's block, they just can't start writing. Or, I mean, I've talked to people who've been paralyzed, physically paralyzed by fear of writing, fear of what other people will say to them. Fear of what other people will think, fear it will be rejected, all of these kind of things. And it's all fear-based, basically. And it's and to me, and this is where kind of my coaching comes in, because I started to realize that there's this kind of idea out there that somehow your writing or how good your writing is or how many readers your writing gets determines your value as a person. And like people get their security and identity and value from how well their writing does, or from what other people think of their writing, or from the quality of their writing, or whatever. And as I kind of started to think, and my own experiences kind of taught me this lesson, really, that actually it's not about that. That our writing has infinite value because we made it, and because we have infinite value as we are. Like our value and our value as people doesn't come from what we do. It comes from the fact that we exist in the first place. It's like Brené Brown talks about, you know, that we belong, we're enough, you know, we're lovable as we are. I mean, I call that grace. You know, I wrote a book about grace. And yeah, it's that kind of understanding of we are enough, we belong, we are lovable and acceptable and valuable as we are. And it's the same with our writing. With any creative work, that it's valuable because you made it, and if it changes nobody else, it will change you, because writing does that to you. You know, I'm a great believer in the healing power of writing and creativity. When we create stuff, it does something to us. But there's this myth that goes around with a lot of, I don't know. There's a lot of people who seem to give the impression that your work only has value if it gets published and you get loads of readers and you make money and you're popular and successful, you know, even moderately successful. And then that destroys people, because other people think, well, I can't be like that. How am I ever going to be like that? I might as well give up. Or I'm not getting, or they start and then they think, I'm not getting the numbers or whatever. I'm not getting people reading my stuff, so I should just give up. And they shouldn't, because their writing has value, even if they're the only people that ever read it. And I believe that passionately. And that if you just want to write for you, and it's only you that sees it, go for it, you know. And so I wanted to help people who were struggling with that, who were, you know, who were to help other people who've been where I was. So that's why I kind of started Anxious Writers, and I started this hashtag to see how many people out there had the same issues as me. And it was unbelievable, the number of people that had it, that responded to the hashtag.
That's actually what I was going to ask you next was...
Are you seeing our questions?
No, I've just done a lot of podcast interviews. I know how these things work.
how many people deal with anxiety around their writing.
Sorry, what was the question?
I said, are you surprised by how many people deal with the anxiety around their writing?
Surprised. I was surprised at how many people were willing to talk about it publicly. I wasn't surprised. In a sense, I was kind of encouraged that I wasn't alone, in a sense. I felt a sense of solidarity. You know, I thought, okay, these are people I can help, and, you know, I'm not the only one who feels this way. You know, I think that's... I didn't doubt that was the case, but I think I doubted that people would come forward and actually talk about it. But they have, you know. We've got a little Facebook group now, and, you know, there's a blog as well, you know, which, you know, I haven't done quite as much with yet. We've had a couple of posts on there, but the real focus of the project is really the Facebook group, and my coaching as well is for people who are struggling with this, and I help people overcome this kind of thing and build good writing habits and start to really find their voice and start to, you know, do the work that they were created to make. You know, that's what I want to do. So that's what, you know, that's kind of, everything's kind of linked to it, really.
Okay. sorry, I am dealing with a little bit of a sinus issue over here, James, so please bear with me.
No problem at all.
You describe yourself as a highly sensitive person. What does that mean to you?
Yeah. Well, I've always been, I'm an introvert. I'm very shy, and I sound like I am because I do a podcast, and I like speaking in front of people, but I am quite shy. And I was always awkward in social situations as well. I've always been more sensitive than anybody else I know. And I thought it was just that I was making a big deal out of it. You know, I didn't realize that being highly sensitive was a thing, that it was in your brain, you know. And then I kind of started talking about, then I started doing some research and talking to people, and I encountered people online who were highly sensitive, and I realized this was actually a thing. So I did some research, and actually I realized the research was amazing. I was like, there's 100 species which have this trait, being highly sensitive. And 20% of human beings have this, and it's something in your brain. It's basically a kind of your threshold of being triggered, upset by something, is higher or lower, depending on how you look at it, than other people. So other people might think,
right.
So it's very difficult to explain because most people don't really understand it. Even a lot of mental health people involved in mental health advocacy don't quite understand it because it's not really been talked about much. And I'm really passionate about talking about it and getting the word out about this stuff, because what happens, I'll tell you what happens when you're triggered as a highly sensitive person. Like somebody might, you might be at a party, people might be joking around, having a bit of banter, and you'll be joining in, and you'll think it's really, really funny, and you'll like, you know, but there'll be a point where they say something and it'll cross a line. And the line for you will be different from the line from most other people if you're highly sensitive. But you still think it's funny, the joke, but something in you is really, really upset and feels violated. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that, violated by what that person has said and that they've crossed the line. And then, so that triggers kind of a whole load of emotions, and you become tense and anxious and defensive and kind of upset. And, you know, even though, like, your head, you'll be thinking, this is funny, why am I getting upset about this? You'll just be completely overwhelmed by this kind of sense of being violated and being hurt and being offended, and that they have been, and you're, and I feel like when that happens, that people are doing it deliberately, even though I know they're not doing it deliberately. And it's a very complicated thing to explain if you haven't actually had it happen to you, if you're not highly sensitive. Because people could think you're being a drama queen, and people think that you're, you know, you take things too seriously, and that's a misunderstanding of it. Because you just get upset, and sometimes you react. You know, you just say, "Well, that's, you know, can you please stop? That I feel that really upset me." It's like, and they go, "Oh, stop taking things so seriously," or, you know, "Stop being such a drama queen. You know, stop trying to draw attention to yourself." And that's not what you're doing. You're just upset because something in your brain has been violated, and you're struggling to deal with it. Now, I, over the years, I've learned how to deal with this. Like, you know, I, even if I'm feeling upset inside or uncomfortable inside, I won't react to it. I'll try to kind of detach myself from it. But there will still be a point where I have to kind of politely, without drawing attention to myself, kind of get up and go to the toilet, or, you know, go to sit in the other room, or go to, you know, chat to somebody else or whatever, because I feel violated, you know.
Right.
So I don't, and I try to do it now without drawing attention to myself, because I know that generally most people aren't out to get me or aren't doing it deliberately. And they probably don't even understand, and it's not their fault, because it's a very rare condition, and it's kind of something that people don't really understand. But it is something that's in your brain. It's not something that you choose. So that's
I completely understand that, actually. You know, we've seen it, you know, with you know, family members and whatnot, where, you know, something is said or done, and, you know, the reaction is, you know, you're thinking, "Oh, well, I didn't do anything," but, you know, that's not the case. And it's, you know, you realize, well, it's not what I did, it, what I did or what I said, it's this person's reaction to it. And, you know, it's, it's hard. You know, Beck is very sensitive about things, and, you know, I've learned over the years that if I have to tell her, you know, like a piece of bad news or something, I try and handle it with kid gloves, because I know how she's going to react to it, you know. And it's just different things like that, you know. But I completely respect what you go through with the sensitivity, and I understand. And yeah, I think it's awesome that you're talking about it and trying to bring attention to it, because, you know, people don't have a tendency to understand when other people are, you know, highly sensitive about things. You know, and they think, well, what are they getting all upset about, you know? And they just, they don't get it, you know. At this point, James, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to take a few minutes to handle a few things here. So we're going to be listening to "Baby Blue Sky" by Nick Hayward, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Great.
Waking up to the
Hey, welcome back. Hey, welcome back to Voices for Change 2.0. We are honored to have you listening to us today, and we are even more honored that we have Mr. James Pesca with us today from London, England. Yay!
Yay!
We love us some England.
And he's not on his cell phone.
No, he's not on his cell phone.
He's not going to drop the call every few minutes, so... We've learned our lesson from, we love you, Karen.
Hey, we love you, Karen.
We learned our lesson from Karen Unruh. She was a fantastic guest, but didn't have the best cell service calling from the UK.
Oh, that's a shame. It can
You're
be
honored, like I said, to have James. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm honored to be here.
It's great to have you with us. And, how important was it for you to tell your story and help out others with similar problems?
Well, yeah, I really believe in doing that, that we should all do that. I think everyone's got a story to share. And when we share our story, then firstly we realize we're not alone. And we find solidarity and community, but also other people can get encouraged as well. And yeah, I really have a genuine belief in sharing our stories and doing life in community, you know, and that's just being honest about who we are. You know, the best places that we grow are when we confront the truth of who we are, when we confront the darkness in us, when we actually walk through it rather than try and walk around it. And we do that. We need community to do that. We need solidarity. We need a safe space. And that's what I try and do with all the work that I do, really, is create that safe space. And, you know, whether it's in my writing or my podcast or the Facebook groups that I'm managing or part of, that's what I believe in. That's what I try and practice. And I think especially the issues that we kind of, that you deal with as well, and that you talk about a lot in your work, and I talk about those issues as well, to a certain extent, that, you know, you need community, you know, that, you know, this is kind of a daily challenge. Mental health stuff is a daily challenge for people, and we need community because we need solidarity and support, and that's really, really important. As human beings.
Yeah. I agree. You know, we, you know, we're all in this together, you know, and, you know, sometimes some of us fall behind and it takes the rest of us to help pull us along and, you know, get us to where we need to be, you know, and, you know, the great thing about, like, we've said it before, there's an awesome mental health community on Twitter, and it's very inclusive and very encouraging, you know, and, you know, knowing that if one of us is struggling or having a bad day or whatever, there's 10, 15 people that will jump in and say, hey, no, you're great. You're doing fine. Everything's going to be okay. And sometimes it's just a matter of hearing everything's going to be okay to help you get through, you know, and loss is, you know, you hear people say that it's a dog eat dog world and everybody's in it for themselves. Mm. And I don't necessarily agree with that. You know, I think we're here in service of others, you know, and to give others the opportunity to help us when we need it. You know?
Yeah.
So it's awesome. It's awesome that you're out there, you know, showing people that they're not alone and that, you know, they can come forward to and, you know, just that they're supported, you know, sometimes that's what people need.
Yeah, I know that's what, when I first, and you have to be careful because sometimes when you first come online and you don't know anybody and, you know, you're struggling initially, and it might discourage you. But you just have to kind of stick with it. And I think that's the most important thing once you start getting the feel for the community and who's a part of it and what a general message is, then, you know, you can start putting yourself out there a little bit more and, you know, you'll feel more comfortable. But that's definitely something that if you're listening, excuse me, if you're listening and you haven't made yourself available on the online community, at least on Twitter, just know that, you know, tread lightly at the beginning, because you don't want to jump right in, you know, full speed ahead and, you know, not get the encouragement that you're looking for.
Yeah.
So just take it easy with that. But
know that you're going to get supported, and, you know, the right people will come to you. They'll filter out of the woodwork.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
James, can you tell us about your book, Mosaic of Grace, and where people can get it?
Yeah, Mosaic of Grace. It's an amazing story, really. I first wrote it 4 years ago, the first draft, thinking it wouldn't get published. And it's a book about, well, it's about grace. But in the book, I talk about what grace really is, why it's important, and how it can transform us and give us hope. And that it can be like putting the pieces of our lives back together to make something beautiful. There's this ancient art called kintsugi, which is in the Far East, where they take broken bits of pots and they put them back together with gold laminate, and they make it into something that's even more beautiful. And that's a metaphor that I use in the book about grace, and that kind of God takes us the broken pieces of our lives and puts them back together to make something more beautiful because of its brokenness. And that's a metaphor for grace, that, you know, that it's not about everything being happy and smiley and perfect, that actually kind of there's beauty in our imperfections, and that, you know, that even with our imperfections we have value and worth as we are, and that if we allow grace to in the door to confront the truth of who we are, the stuff that's painful and the stuff that's challenging and the stuff that's good about us, and we can receive that, then we can be transformed. And I really believe that, and I've experienced that for myself. You know, that's kind of been my journey of the last couple of years, has been confronting my own demons, in a sense, like going into, you know, bad habits, bad ways of thinking about myself, bad routines, you know, and you know, like I trained myself basically to sabotage my life. I trained myself to, you know, push people away and be defensive and be angry and overeating, all these kind of things, because I blame myself for a trauma that I went through when I was a child and for my mother's death. And I somehow subconsciously blame myself for those things. So I subconsciously trained myself to punish myself by pushing everyone away, by not taking care of myself, by, you know, by thinking of myself negatively. And I hadn't done, there's a lot of forgiveness I hadn't done. And I've done a lot of inner work in the last 2 years. And that is what grace does. It shines the light on the stuff that you try to keep buried. And it's painful and it's difficult when you go through that process. And I've probably had some of the lowest moments of my life going through this process. Some of the darkest nights of the soul, you know, some of the loneliest times. But and I'm still in that process, in a sense, you know, because it's not like something is at the end and suddenly it's all happy ever after. But I, through this process, I've found a lot of freedom and forgiveness and transformation and hope. And that's kind of the message of the book, is that I mean, the book isn't the story of the last 2 years, because I wrote it 4 years ago, but That's my next bit. but in many ways, it was kind of a prophetic word about my own life, because that's the process that I've kind of been through, and I believe in it completely. I believe grace is the beginning of everything, because grace is like where you get your value from. You know, when I coach writers, the first thing we talk about is not their writing and not what they want to do as a writer. It's who they are and where their value comes from, where their security comes from, and if it comes from their work, then they're in trouble. And then we have to let go of that and kind of be free and recognize that we already have value and that work already has value. And that's kind of what grace does for us.
Right.
And yeah, that's
absolutely
on Amazon, My Bake of Grace. So I'd love for everyone to check it out. Yeah. So that's a bit about my book.
Where can they get it?
Oh, Amazon. Sorry. Yeah, it's on Amazon. Just search Mosaic of Grace. It's got kind of a broken red heart on the cover as well. So you'll probably recognize it. Mosaic of Grace. Yes, it's on Amazon. You can get that now. Please do go and buy and read and let me know what you think.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, tell us about your podcast and the type of guests that you focus on.
Yeah, my podcast, it's called Poema, which is it's spelt poem and then an A on the end. And that word is a word, again, it's from scripture, that where it talks about us being God's workmanship, God's masterpiece. So it's a word about creativity, it's a word about identity, it's a word about spirituality. And I launched this podcast 2.5 years ago, and it's basically a podcast where I explore those ideas. Sometimes I do solo episodes, sometimes I do discussion episodes, sometimes I have really special guests, and I've been very lucky to have some amazing guests on there, and learned so much from all of them just from talking to them. You know, I mean, I had Rob Bell come on, who was unbelievable, just incredible. And Peter Rollins, philosopher Peter Rollins. I think I had Becca on 1 week as well.
Yeah.
And you know, I've talked about all sorts of issues. I've had a neurologist on as well, talking about how the brain works and mental health strategies to help us deal with anxiety and all that kind of thing. I talked to somebody about that. I've had people. I had Glennon Doyle Melton on, Sarah Bessie, and the band Gunga came on as well. Science Mike, if you've heard of him, it's a great podcast in itself. Ask Science Mike. He came on. I've had some amazing guests. It'll take me ages to go through all of them, because I've done over 100 episodes now, actually. So it's crazy. And I love doing it. I really do. It's on iTunes, and you can subscribe there if you want to take a listen to some of the old episodes. And I generally launch a new episode every Wednesday. And yeah, I genuinely love doing it, because I think I like talking. I think I actually like talking, which for somebody who probably may have mild Asperger's or be a high functioning Asperger's, who struggles with social skills and picking up social cues, and who's introverted and struggles to do kind of general chit chat conversation, and that's quite an amazing thing, really. But I mean, when I start talking about something that I'm passionate about, then, and it's about a topic rather than just general conversation, then I'm away. You know, the adrenaline gets going. So, yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it. I want to be a lot
more. You kind
of
get going on it. Yeah. No, I can appreciate that. I do that a little bit. If I'm talking about something I'm very passionate about, like, music gear, for example, it's hard to shut me up, and the wife can attest to that.
Mm-hmm.
hey, James. You have also been coaching other writers with anxiety. Would you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a quite humbling thing to do, and it's quite an encouraging thing to do, and it's like a privilege really to be able to help writers who are struggling. I do it within the context of, in two ways. I do it within the context of the group, the Facebook groups that I'm in, where people share, and I either have one-to-one conversations with them or I just reply in the comments and we have a kind of discussion there. And I share about fears and anxieties and stuff about writing. The other way I've helped people is one-to-one coaching. So I had one client who, they kind of thought they knew what they wanted to do, but they weren't sure about how to do it and didn't know where to begin and were a bit overwhelmed by everything and didn't know where to start. And so this kind of fear thing was gripping them. It was over, you know, it was controlling them in a sense. And the first time I talked to them, they talked about some of the things that I asked them what they were passionate about, what they cared about, because I wanted to hear about them, not about what they, you know, I was trying to do this thing of let's not focus on what you want to do, let's focus on who you are. And so I just wanted to hear what they really cared about. And they talked to me about it, and they talked to me about this thing they love to do, and their profession, I think, or the thing that they love to do was to help women do natural births and have births at home and help women who were going through pregnancy and all the challenges that brings. But this was nothing to do with what they were telling me they wanted to write about. And yet I kind of knew this is what they needed to be doing, because the way they talked about it was just they had such energy. You know, like you were talking about, you know, when you talk about something that you love, you just get that energy from talking about it. So, and they kind of came to life. You know, that anxiety just went when they talked about this thing that they love. And so what I did is I kind of worked with them and tried to get them to explore what they cared about and to just shift that. Again, it's just shifting that, getting your value from what you do to just knowing that you're valuable as you are. And that kind of, and we did that, and it kind of set her free a little bit to just explore what she really cared about, rather than I'm going to try and do this because this is, I'm going to try and do this because this is what I should do. This is what I'm a writer, so I should build a platform, and I'm a woman, so I should be a mummy blogger, you know, because that's what women writers do. And actually, her calling was bigger than that, and it was her passion was different to that. So as we worked together over a period of time, she started to realise this for herself. And I didn't tell her. I never once actually told her this is what you should be doing. I kind of gently nudged it and kind of encouraged it, and she started exploring it for herself. And now that's what she's doing.
That's awesome.
So that's her job, and she's helping pregnant mothers, and she's got a Facebook page and a blog all to do with this stuff, and that was like wow, you know, not even I could believe that happened, you know, because I was just so happy for her when that happened, you know, and
it's
just that's
it's
what
like
happened.
The light bulb went off.
Yeah, that's when I realized I wanted to do a lot more coaching, because that was the first person I coached, and that's when I really wanted to do a lot more of it. And, you know, I've helped other people with anxiety over writing books as well. Somebody came to me with, they had all these ideas written down, jumbled up, and they wanted some clarity. So I kind of helped them break down those ideas into kind of a structure. We just kind of worked together for a few sessions. And suddenly their book kind of had a bit of a shape to it. And suddenly the kind of all that fear and anxiety that they had about writing a book, which can seem really overwhelming when you sit down.
Right.
To do, even if you really want to write a book, the whole like idea of it, like, you've got to start with a blank page, you know. So it's like, well, where do I begin? You know, and it can seem really overwhelming. So just being with somebody, talking to them, being accountable, walking it through with them, helping them break it down, kind of eased all those fears, and they were able to start planning this book and starting to write it. That's another example, you know. And I really love helping people overcome their fears and their anxieties about, especially about writing, but not just about writing, about finding their calling, about finding their identity, about finding their vocation, you know, because ultimately,
right.
There's so many crossovers between writing and life, because life is a creative process. Like we get to create our life, you know, and either we can choose to either let life create us, or we can take responsibility for it and you know, create the life that we want for ourselves. You know, it doesn't mean that there aren't external things that will happen to us that will impact our lives, or that we don't have conditions. You know, I'm always going to be a highly sensitive person. I'm always going to have anxiety, you know. But if you can kind of live with those, learn how to live with those things rather than let them control you. And it's not easy. And, you know, I know it's not easy because I'm...
Right.
Because, you know, anxiety always kind of strikes. you know, it's not,
yeah,
it's not something you get
to
choose. But if you can try and get a way of acknowledging it and just saying, okay, I have to live with this. But I'm not going to let it dictate to me what I do with my life. I'm not going to let it make my decisions for me. You know, I'm not going to let my anxiety create a life that I don't want. You know, and I mean,
yeah.
I know people who I work with, a publicist who's had anxiety and depression, and she helped me out. You know, it was she was helping me promote my writing and things, and she's built a thriving business. You know, even with having those issues, you know, and she still has anxiety. The depression's kind of gone, kind of now, in a sense. It's not gone, but
it's managed.
You know, it's managed, yeah.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't know she'd had depression at all, really. From I didn't know she had depression when I met her. And
yeah, it's.
Yeah. But it's. But she
over
she,
time.
Yeah. She. Yeah. Sorry. No.
No, just you kind of learn over time how to manage it. You know, living with Beck as long as I have, you know, she's got days where, you know, the depression will get the better of her. And, you know, she's lucky if she's just hanging out in bed, you know. And then there's other days where, you know, she's able to manage it and get up and do stuff. And even though she's feeling down, she's still getting stuff done, you know. And, you know, the days where she's able to get up and get stuff done, it's like, you know, that's awesome, you know. And the days where all she can manage is laying in bed, you know, that's, you know, I tell her that, you know, hey, that's sometimes it's what you need, and don't feel guilty about it. It is what it is, and you're doing what you can to manage what you're going through, you know. I wanted to say really quick that, you know, I think it's awesome that when you're coaching people and you're talking with them, that you are showing them that they have value, that they, you know, it doesn't matter what they're trying to do. It matters that they are, you know, that resonates big time. Big time
Thank
is such
you.
A great way of putting it. It very, very much resonates with me. You know, and I feel the same way about people. It matters more who they are, and, you know, that they exist, that they're here. You know, I tell Beck all the time, I don't care if she gets anything done around the house. All I care about is that she's here and that she loves me and I love her. You know, I tell her that often. I've told her that for 16 years, you know. Really quick, because we're getting down on our time here, James. But really quickly, do you have any advice for anyone that is struggling with anxiety but desperately wants to be a writer? Do you have any tips?
I would say have grace with yourself. Don't put too much pressure on yourself. It doesn't have to be perfect. and just try and do what you can every day. You know, if what you can write every day is a sentence or a paragraph and it's rubbish, doesn't matter. Just show up and try and write something every day. Whatever comes out, it doesn't have to fit with anything. Just try and show up and write, you know, and if things are really bad, you know, and if you can, then just kind of take 10 minutes on your phone, like maybe think of a word or prompt or something, or just write from your heart and just write for 10 minutes and see what comes out without really thinking about, without planning ahead, without editing, and see what comes out. Because I think that's how I found my voice, you know, when just writing every day without really any kind of plan, without editing, just for 10 minutes and just letting what was inside come out. And that's risky, and it's you know, it's dangerous, but it's also ultimately how you discover who you really are and what you're meant to write about. But just take it one step at a time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just if all you can get out of a sentence, that's great. If all you can get out of a word, that's great. You know, just do what you can and just build it up slowly, and don't put too much pressure on yourself. It doesn't have to be perfect. And you're already enough.
That's good advice.
That is good advice. Yeah. You know, you don't put any undue pressure on yourself. You know, just try.
Yeah.
You know, where can people find you on social media if they're looking to learn more about you and what you do?
Well, I'm on Twitter, at James Prescott 77. I'm on, that's my Instagram account as well. James Prescott Writer on Facebook. There's also an Anxious Writers Facebook group and another Facebook group called Writers Together, which are all part of the work I do. You can find me there. That's all my social media stuff. And there's my website, which is jamesprescott.co.uk, which has links to all the work that I do.
Okay.
And yeah, so you can find me there. And please do connect with me, because I will respond. I always like talking to people and connecting with people. So yeah, I'd love to hear from you.
Awesome.
That's great.
Well, thanks again so much for taking the time to be with us today, James. We are very appreciative, very grateful to you. We love the message that you're getting out there, and you know,
keep up the good work.
Yes, please, please keep up the good work and stay on the line. We are going to ride out the show with another song from Nick Hayward. This is Perfect Sunday.
Became Haley Mills. I became Alan. Don't miss the mental health memoir. Don't miss the mental health memoir of the year. It's Not Your Journey. It's Not Your Journey is the true story of one woman's 20-year battle with mental illness and her recovery from a suicide attempt in 2013. Rebecca Lombardo candidly reveals her real and raw emotions in dealing with depression, bipolar disorder, the loss of her mother and brother, and more. Pick it up today on Amazon.com or visit www.RebeccaLombardo.com for more information.
Join us next week as Rebecca and Joe continue to battle the stigma of mental illness. Follow us on Twitter at Voices for Change RJ and on Facebook at Voices for Change 2.0.